Everybody, it's welcome to Blind Like Me. I better not say the number of the show because Matthew Horsepool takes that stuff seriously. He thinks I know what I'm talking about, and I don't. Anyway, we recorded this lady about a month ago, I guess, and right in the middle of everything, I was recording her with Skype, as I am doing today, and everything quit. And I didn't get the last part of the interview, so she graciously agreed to do it again. If I miss it this time, I'm in trouble, right?
Oh, yeah.
I better get it this time. Joe Wilson, how are you today?
I'm fine. It's been hot up here, but it's finally a nice day up here.
Well, you sound happy. You sound like everything's going okay. We were just talking about stays in the hospital. You were in the hospital for a good length of time, and they came to your house and got you strong again so you can walk again.
Yeah, I was in the hospital for 28 days in June and July, and spent 2 months here at the house doing physical therapy, so I didn't have spaghetti legs.
Yeah.
So I'm back to being able to walk, and it's nice to be able to stand up and not go, ooh.
Those of you who haven't ever spent any time in a hospital or in a position where you aren't moving around, you will find that even if you could walk fine when you went in, your legs began to atrophy, and you can't walk after a week or so of laying in the bed. And that's not your fault or anybody else's. That's just the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the way the body is made. If you don't use it, it goes away.
It does. It atrophies, because they say it atrophies, and it does. But that physical therapy helps a lot. But, you know, I always tell this joke. I think I told you this last time. My little joke is when I was younger, I was a musician, and I did some drinking and taking drugs, and I found out now I can get the same effect since I'm taking blood pressure medicine by just standing up fast.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You just get dizzy as you can be when you stand up quickly. I guess that happens.
When I bend over to tie my shoes and stand up, it's like, whoa. You have to take it slow.
And this guy said that when he tied his shoes, he looked down there and he'd make sure that there wasn't anything else he wanted to do while he's down there because he didn't want to get down there again. See if there was anything else he could take care of.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I can too.
Yeah, the older I get, the harder it is to bend down and tie those shoes. Those slip-on shoes start looking really good.
I have them. I have all.
I have a few pairs now.
I've got some tie ones that I wear if I go in somewhere, but around the house, it's nothing but slip-on, so I can almost get in them without bending over at all.
Oh, yeah, well, being a woman, we get the ones that have the open back, so we can just slide them on and go.
Well,
guys don't wear those.
This is all part of the aging process, part of getting old. We tend to think of it sometimes as a personal experience. Well, it isn't. It's just part of living long and being around this world a long time. You know, used to when people died when they were 45 and 50 years old, I guess they didn't have this, but they've got us living now. Life expectancy is about 74, I think, for men in the United States, and so you're gonna have these things. Well, you've done this many times. You're just comfortable as you can be.
You just no nerves at all today.
You've done this enough now that you're comfortable, because you did handyman show with us one time 6 months ago or so. All right, well, let's start over and start talk about your blindness and how it came to be and why you're blind pretty much totally now and why.
Well, I was 14 when I lost my sight, and it was an overnight process. I went to bed with vision and woke up without any vision.
Wow.
And it's a disease that was later called Coates' disease by one of the scientific doctors that was studying it, named Dr. Coates. And what it is a virus that attacks only the human eye, starting with the retinas. And they don't just get holes or tears, they dissolve. So there's no repair. They cannot be repaired because they're no longer there. And that's what happened to me. Basically, I went to bed one night totally fine. I woke up the next morning totally blind. So it was a big adjustment.
Yeah, I think you said you were, don't you have a daughter? Do you have a daughter? Or was I talking
to
some?
I have a son and a daughter.
And no matter what happened to them at 14, because 14 is a terrible age.
Yeah, 14 anyway. And 15, yes.
But no matter what happened to them, they're not going to beat what happened to Mama when she was...
Yeah, well, my husband left us when my son was just about 15. And he says, you don't know how awful it is to be 15. I said, oh, baby, I can give you notes.
Yeah.
I know how awful it is to be 15.
Do I know how awful it is to be 15?
Just yeah, I said, I went through a lot that year, too, but you can get through it, and we have, and, you know, you're a stronger person for it most of the time. If you can look at the way I look at it is you don't look at the can't, you look at the how can I, not how can't I. So you have to look at the positive, even if it's hard to find that little positive.
You don't. When you think about it, you don't have a choice.
No,
you're not given
you really
a
don't.
Choice. If it happens to you and it's, you know, I always think of the alcoholic's prayer. Give me the strength to know, you know, help me to change the things I can. Help me to not worry about the things I can't change and help. Give me the wisdom to know the difference.
Yep, that's the serenity prayer. I actually wear that on a medallion around my neck.
Well,
it's called the serenity prayer. And boy, there are some days when I just have to believe that that's the way it works.
Well, you not only have to believe it, that's the way it works. I mean, that's
it is.
That is the way life, you know. I was telling Luann last night, I'm 66, fixing to be 67, and while I'd like to be somewhat younger, I wouldn't like to go back and be as stupid as I was, because now everything that's happened that life can throw at me, pretty much, it's done. It's all happened. You know, no matter what happens, it's all right. I've been there before. They're not going to surprise me.
Oh, yeah. I hear that. Well, I wouldn't want to be a teenager in this day.
I wouldn't either.
I mean, having raised my kids through the teens of this generation, no way would I want to go back there.
Well, and I know that there are young 20-year-old, 18, 14, 30-year-old people listening to us and thinking, well, Jesus, this is an old folks show, and today it is, because Joe and I are both, she's got her AAP card, AARP card, and so do I. So we're both older folks, and we've been around a while, and hopefully, they say wisdom comes with age. That's not true, unless it's not. I know people that are older that didn't gain any wisdom, but if you want to gain wisdom, it's there.
I've known quite a few that didn't gain any wisdom. They could have lived to be 200.
So. Could have lived to 200. All right, so you're 14 years old, and you wake up one morning, and there is no sight in either eye.
Nope, nothing.
One eye, did both of them go at once? I mean,
I actually had limited vision in my left eye due to a birth defect. But it went, too. I mean, it just went gone. No light perception, no nothing. So it was a big, very big adjustment.
So this wasn't just, let's go in and repair this. There wasn't any repairs. I guess your folks scrambled around and took you everywhere they could think of, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And I lived in New Hampshire, so we were a couple hours from Mass Eye and Ear Hospital, which is one of the best in the world for eye conditions. So we ended up down there within a day. And I spent a week in there with them trying to figure out what the heck had happened and what they could do. And finally they had to say, we have no clue. The retinas are just gone. They're just not there. We can't find them anywhere. They weren't floating. They weren't there. So it was interesting for them. I became a study case, not just a patient, which was rough.
I imagine you did. Most of the doctors had never seen this before, had never encountered.
Nothing like it. And they just, you know, they were as baffled as they could be, which doesn't make it easy to reassure a patient when the doctor has no clue what is going on.
Now, this was in Boston, down in Boston?
Yeah. Yeah, Mass Eye and Ear Hospital, which is one of the big ones down there.
All right. So how long did they keep you that time?
A week. And then they had me coming back every other week for tests, which was rough on my parents, I think, as much as me.
Yeah.
Because it was a two and a half hour drive one way. And we'd spend all day doing whatever they wanted me to do for tests, and then we'd go home.
And this was in the early 60s or late 50s? Or
late 70s.
Well, late 70s.
I'm only 44. You're making me older than I was.
Well, I really am. You don't have your AARP card then, do you?
Actually, through my father's retirement, I do. I actually am considered a retired person. So
I had you a lot older than you were. Well, late, say, 40s, in your 40s?
I'm 44.
I remember those years quite well. They were a long time ago, honey, but I remember.
Yeah, well, with my heart condition, I feel a lot older than 44.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a few minutes. So they kept you a week, and you came back home. You had to go back to school. What did they do with you then?
Well, I was very, very lucky because the mainstreaming law was passed in New Hampshire that year.
Uh-huh.
So they could not keep me out of public school. They had to let me back in with my class. And basically, my friends agreed to guide me because I had no other way of getting around. At that point, I hadn't learned anything. And we were still thinking it would be a temporary thing. I mean, the doctors had not said, this is forever. They said, well, we'll keep running tests. Maybe we'll find something that we can do. And they knew from the start that there was nothing that they could do, but did not share that information with my parents and I until I was 17 and had graduated high school and demanded to know after 2 years why nothing had been done. And then they said, well, we wanted to continue to monitor your case, so we told you that maybe we could do something so you'd keep coming back.
You know, there would be several schools of thought on that. I don't know if that's bad or not.
Well, it would have been, if they'd given me the choice, I still would have kept coming back. But the fact that they didn't, that they let my parents, as well as me, believe that there may be something that they could do, that upset me more than that they let me believe it, that they let my parents believe it.
Uh-huh.
And that just wasn't fair. I mean, to hold that hope out for 2 years when they knew it was a hopeless cause, basically, I should have just been told and allowed to adjust because you just don't put as much into learning Braille, learning to use a cane, learning to readjust if you think you're getting your sight back.
That's true. You wouldn't do it with as much fervor if you thought that fairly soon the sight is coming.
Yeah, I was wasting my time and just doing it to kill time. I wasn't going to put any effort into it.
Yeah.
And I didn't. You know, it took me 2 years to learn Braille.
Yeah.
And that was because I didn't think I would need it, so I didn't take it seriously.
So my sight is coming back, and so I won't need this, and so why should I bother? You got a point there. However, it would be something to be said for not swallowing the pill, I guess, all at once. I would be I'd want to know all at once kind of a guy, but there may be.
Yeah, well, so that's how I am, too. I've worked with people that have very gradually lost their vision, and I think that's a lot harder because you never know, is it going to happen today, tomorrow, next month, next year? It's hard to prepare with living life from day to day like that. But when you wake up and it's just gone, you pretty much adjust or don't adjust. There's no middle of the road.
And everybody thinks when I die, I'd like to just die. I mean, I'd like to just not go to bed some night and not wake up. Well, that would be the ideal deal, but most people don't. Most people
get that, unfortunately, but some people do.
Oh, they do. Hang around a while and torture everybody. And anyway, so you're 14 years old, but you had already made lots of friends because you'd gone to this same school all your life.
Yeah, so basically, I'd been small town, you know, so everybody knew everybody, and some people were afraid of the fact that I had just woken up without sight, and they didn't want anything to do with me because, you know, it may be contagious.
Yeah,
they maybe could catch it, so they didn't want anything to do with me. But most of my friends stuck it out for as long as they could. You know, there was a few that just didn't ever associate with me again, which was their loss, not mine.
Well, I think we discussed this before. Sometimes sighted people think they're going to catch blind.
Yep.
You know, they think that's going to, you know, he's blind, and so if I fool with him, I may become.
Oh, yeah. I had one teacher that would talk to me from across the room because she was sure if I got too close and breathed on her, she'd go blind. And it became my goal of the school year to get close enough to sneeze on her, just to freak her out. And I did, too. But she made me so mad doing that that I just decided that I was going to make sure she understood that you couldn't catch it.
I can imagine at 14 actually thinking that.
Yeah.
At a little 14-year-old girl. So, but you made it through high school, and how did you, you began learning Braille. I guess they read orally to you. There's no other way they could have communicated with you.
Yep, I had readers. I had volunteer readers in the school.
Uh-huh.
That would usually somebody from the class that had to read it anyway. And I had learned to touch type the year before because of, back in the 70s, girls were going to be secretaries, so learned to type.
Yeah.
So that saved me. I could type all my reports and my homework and everything like that.
So the thing is, you couldn't tell what you were typing. You were typing literally blind.
Yeah. Yep, and my mother would go over and proofread it, and they would, the teachers were really good about, you know, misspellings and stuff like that that I couldn't go back and fix. What I would have done for a computer.
Yeah, now we've got these wonderful computers. We know exactly what we type, and we can go back and correct our spelling errors. And
30 years ago, I would have killed for one. It was like...
Oh, yeah, I've always said that.
We used the carbon paper, and... I mean, I remember once I typed a whole report with my carbon paper backwards, so instead of having a second copy, I had a reverse copy on the back of the first copy. And it was...
Yeah.
After the fact, it was funny, but when it happened, it wasn't funny.
Well, and I've done stories, I've done talked to people, to blind people, the ribbon was out in the typewriter, and they typed a whole report and didn't really type anything, didn't realize, way of knowing, you know.
Yep. I did one report where somebody had reset it to... the red, and the red ribbon was not good.
Yeah.
So it was little shadow letters every now and then, but most of it was empty. And I had to retype the whole report. And I think I probably cried through half it because I was so mad.
Yeah.
Because I had checked the ribbon was in there, but it had been switched down to the lower ribbon, and it wasn't a good ribbon on that end. So it was very frustrating.
That would be. But that's the way it was back then. That's how it was for blind people back then, before we got...
Yep, and I learned Braille and how to use a cane through the once-a-week itinerant teachers, the ITs that came, that would travel around the state and make their visits for an hour or two every week.
Yeah.
And I would learn, like, 5 letters a week when I was first learning the Braille. And then I'd have to, you know, wait a week to learn the next 5. But that was the way it was done back then.
Did you date any in high school after you lost your sight? I would think not.
Actually, I did. In our household, you weren't allowed to date till you were 16.
Uh-huh.
So that was just our parents' rule. So yeah. I did date a couple of young men in high school. But it was funny because I'll never forget the first one that asked me out said, "Well, what do you want to do? I don't imagine you want to go to the movies." I said, "I like movies." And they were like, "But how do you watch the movie?" I said, "Well, if I have any questions, I'll say, what the heck's going on?"
Yeah.
And by the time the movie was over, I can even remember it was Grumpy Old Men, the first one.
Yeah.
And it was not that visual, so I didn't have to ask too many questions while we were watching it. And it kind of eased up the whole nervousness of the first date and everything. But
yeah,
it was,
I got you.
You know, I went to the prom, my senior prom. I didn't go to my junior prom, but I did go to the senior prom with that same young man that took me to the movies. So it was hard, though, because I know there would have been a lot more dating had I been sighted.
Sure.
Because they just didn't know how to deal with me. You know, we had a disco, but how do you take a blind person dancing was their thought. And I actually, my senior year of high school, actually won 3 dance contests doing disco. When I finally found somebody that was willing to dance with me, so...
Because you had learned to dance before you lost your eyesight?
Well, not just that. It's just I had taken lessons before. When I was younger, I'd done all the tap, jazz, and ballet and all that. But I just was very musically inclined. I still love music.
Uh-huh.
And I loved to dance. And it was just something, you know, that you just... One of the last movies I visually saw was Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, okay.
So... I knew what disco dancing was, and just did what I wanted to. And as long as I kept one hand in my partner's hand, we were fine. You know, it was interesting.
So, but there were no other blind kids around for you to talk with or to...
Oh, no. Well, in fact, I can remember that they thought it would help if I had a counselor, you know, if I talked it out with somebody. Well, they put me with this middle-aged, sighted guy that the first words out of his mouth were, "I know how you feel."
Sure he did.
I went off like a rocket. I did. I said, "There is no way you know how I feel." He says, "Well, when I was in my schooling, we blindfolded each other for an hour." And I know what it, I said, "Oh, no." I said, "You knew that blindfold was coming off." I said, "My blindfold's never coming off." So
I know how you feel. Yeah, sure you did.
So they got smart, and my mother basically told this guy, "We don't need you. Thank you very much." Yeah. And he wrote down that I was suicidal and everything. It was really bad.
Really?
Because that stays in your record.
Yeah.
But they found me a woman that was only about 10 years older than me that was blind and brought her to see me. And she, when she said, "Listen, I know what you're going through," she did. And she helped me deal with a lot of the issues that a sighted person just cannot help you deal with. You know, fear of falling was the worst thing I had to deal with. Even just stepping off a curb, I would envision these huge holes to fall in, you know, and I would just be afraid to step down off of a curb.
Oh, my.
And it was just, I mean, it was awful there at the beginning, and stairs and, you know, anything like that would scare me silly. And then a year into the blindness, I fell down the stairs and broke my leg, so that just added to the fear of falling. But, you know, it was something I had to overcome. And I did.
In some way or another, you got it in your mind that when you stepped off a curb or started down a set of stairs, you were going to fall into a big hole somewhere.
Yeah. Basically, I just had this unreasonable fear that there was not going to be pavement or another step when I stepped down. It was one of those stupid things that just works away at your subconscious, and you don't even think about it. You know, and I got to the point where I was a nervous wreck when I'd have to step down. It was just ridiculous. You know, I know that now, but at that time, and I'll never forget about, I was on my second seeing eye dog. So it would have been probably 20 years later.
Uh-huh.
And they actually dug up along the curbs of my street and did not put up barriers or cones.
Uh-huh.
And I went to get my daughter from school, and my dog wouldn't go off the curb. She started edging sideways and edging sideways, and I'm thinking, what the heck is this game, you know? And I kept going forward and forward, and luckily I didn't do the anticipate and step off, because there was a 6-foot hole on the other side of that curb. It would have been my nightmare come true.
It would have been.
Yeah, it was basically they had dug up the pipes along the curb, and it was about 6 feet deep and 3 foot wide, and they had not put cones up. So,
man, that's something.
Yeah, I called the city and said, "Excuse me, if I had gone off that curb and had I been using a cane, I would have. You know, basically, I would have. It was my home territory.
Yeah.
I went up and down that street 3-4 times a day. I never would have hesitated to step off that curb." But the dog would not let me. So.
I was thinking the same thing about a cane. The cane, if you'd had the cane, you would have just stuck it off the curb and made sure you were at the curb and stepped.
Yep. And stepped, and I would have gone, whoop, and it would have been my nightmare come true.
Because at first I was thinking, well, gee, if you had a cane, you wouldn't have done that. But you, I wouldn't now, because I'm so much more careful now since my balance is as bad as it is. But
yep.
And I'm so much older.
That's the kind of thing where you learn to don't overachieve. Don't decide that it's going to be safe because you've done it 20 times. You know, you just cannot anticipate something like that.
But when
I had heard the construction people, but they weren't real close to the house, so I thought nothing of it.
Yeah.
And it was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, but when I was young, I would have, like you said, overcompensated or over.
Yeah,
over...
you would have checked the curb. Yep, I'm at the curb. Step down. You wouldn't have sat down to make sure the pavement was there because it was there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always there.
Well, I was telling you that I walk around, if I'm going out to around my pool, I use my cane now. I'm not going to fall in the pool. I know where it is, and it's got a little lip around it. That's not going to happen. But after falling in it once, I'm kind of scared, and I'm afraid I will, so I don't want that to happen again.
No, it can be frightening.
Actually, twice since I moved over here, and I think twice in the other pool. And I've had a pool, houses with a pool for 20-something years. And four times in 20-something years is really pretty good.
Oh, yeah,
for a blind
definitely.
Person, totally blind person to have a
definitely. Well, you're pool. Not the first blind person I've talked to that's gone into a pool like that when they own the pool. So
yeah,
it's just something that people do. I've known a couple of sighted people that have not been paying attention, have been talking and looked around to say something and gone off the edge of their pool.
Well, I don't do this anymore because I don't do anything in the pool anymore. But I used to hand put chemicals in that pool. I mean,
yeah.
That was my deal. I walked around and dropped chlorine in it, a bucket of chlorine once a week, and a part of a bottle of acid. That's the pool that my friend Don Shaw has now. And neither time doing that did I fall in the pool. I ran out to get a little ice chest. It was sitting by the pool and overshot one time. And then a couple of other times over here. But so you had this terrible fear of stepping up. But this older person that was blind got you over that? Past you?
She said, you have to have faith in yourself and know that, yes, accidents are going to happen, but they're not going to happen to you daily. You know, you don't have to be afraid of stuff that you are familiar with, like your own house. I mean, it was the stairs in my own house would even give me that effect, which, and she understood it because she had gone through the same type of thing with that fear of falling and stuff like that. And I realized I wasn't the only one dealing with these issues, and that helped amazingly. Knowing that you're not the only one that has to cope can do wonders for your self-esteem.
Well, of course, sighted people develop phobias.
Oh, yeah.
Just as often as we, as blind people do, but that would be a terrible thing, would be thinking stairs were going to...
Just going to disappear.
Especially if you lived in a house with stairs. That would be...
Well, and we did. We lived on the second and third floor. So basically, I could not leave the house without at least one flight of stairs.
There's no way to go anywhere without... Without stairs. All right. When you got out of high school, what did you... I ask everybody the same question. What did you think you could do to support yourself or to get by this life?
Well, basically, I had been trained as a secretary receptionist, as all girls were in
at that time. Yes.
At that time.
Yeah.
And being fully trained and being hireable are two different stories when you can't see, especially in small-town New Hampshire. We have, there's 20 applicants for a job, 19 are sighted, one's blind. I had no chance.
No, you didn't. No chance whatsoever.
So the state decided to try sending me to college, to just a two-year program there in the town that I lived in. There was a vocational college for the deaf and hearing impaired was what they had, their specialty.
Oh.
So they stuck me there, hoping they could make it for the blind and visually impaired, too. What they didn't take into consideration was several of the professors were totally deaf and mute and wrote everything on the board. There was not a PA system. They had screens where messages were put up on the walls. It was a joke, basically. I lasted 9 months before I said, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, it is really hard for a deaf person and a blind person to communicate under the best of conditions.
Oh, yeah. I could see the state's attempt to, make it more accessible to everybody. But you just cannot combine some disabilities. And blind and deaf are definitely two of them.
Well, they had to do something with you. They needed to do something with you. You were wanting a job, and you were a bright child, and so they had to put you somewhere.
Yeah. Well, after that, we tried the Carroll Center for the Blind down in Massachusetts, which was an adult rehabilitation center, and they basically taught people Braille and to use a cane.
You already knew
how to type, and I knew all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, I went down there, and it was like, well, Let's start with the home row keys on the typewriter. I'm going, I type 102 words a minute. Oh, well, what about Braille? I said, yes, I know Braille. And you have a dog, so you don't use cane. I said, no. Can you cook? I said, yes. Well, why are you here? I said, because they don't know what to do with me.
You could. How did you learn to cook? Had your mother taught you to? You said your.
Oh no, my mother had to leave the room when they were teaching me.
who is they? Were teaching you?
I had one of the rehab teachers came to my house and taught me how to cook because they knew I would need to. And my mother basically, she was so terrified they had to throw her out. She's sitting there going. Oh, yeah.
What did she think was going to happen to you? You were going to get burned? You were going to burn your hands? Or?
My hands were too close to the pans, and I was using a sharp knife. And you know, she did really well. My mother was amazing when I lost my sight. She was just amazing that she was able to push me to do things that I thought I could never do again. And I know for a fact that she cried herself to sleep more than once because she had to be mean to me.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, we talked probably 15, 20 years after I lost my sight as adults, and I heard a lot of what she went through. And it just amazed me because by then I was a parent, and I was thinking, could I do that to my kids?
Yeah, your kids were both fully sighted. Your kids could both see well.
Praise God, yes.
Yeah,
that was my biggest fear when I was carrying them, was that they, because they didn't know what had caused it with me.
Yeah.
That I might pass it on to them. And
but
I
you didn't.
Just,
neither nope. one of them. Well, you know, when you're frying something like sausage or something like that, your hand is not only close to the pan, it's in the pan. When I flip something, if I'm flipping sausage, I know how many I have, so I got four pieces of sausage. I put my hand down in the pan and put my hand on top of the piece that I'm going to slide a spatula under.
Mm-hmm. I put my fingertips. Yeah, exactly.
And you're not. That doesn't hurt you.
Nope. But if you're not careful, that spit and grease will get you.
Spit and grease will get you, and the side of the pan is the worst. You know, the side of the pan. You got to know where you are and what you're doing, and you got to be careful. Yes, you do, but you
even
can...
sighted, you have to be careful. I remember to this day my baby sister, who was two when I lost my sight, came flying through the kitchen once, and we were cooking bacon.
Yeah.
And she caught the edge of the pan, the handle.
Oh.
And flipped that whole pan off the stove. And there was a pound of bacon in there. And it had been on just long enough that it was 90% greasy. And I grabbed for her with one hand and the pan with the other hand. And I burned myself really bad, but not one drop got her. So
this was your sister, you say?
Yeah, my baby sister.
Okay.
She learned a hard lesson that day by watching me go through the owies for her. But I ended up with third-degree burns on my right hand, which is the one I was learning to read with. So it really screwed things up.
Yeah. I always turn the handle away, so that can't happen
to
me.
Well, see, I wasn't cooking. Somebody else was.
Yeah.
One of my siblings was, and she wasn't as careful. And it was just, it was turned towards the center of the stove, but it was overhanging the front just enough. It had one of those rings that you hang the pan up from.
Yep.
And that's what she caught. Going under it, so
she learned a hard lesson that day. I try to. Very Luann scares me. My wife scares me because she cooks fast. She cooks everything so fast. I have to go do something else when she's cooking.
Well, my dogs and cats learn real quick, and my kids do not come in the kitchen when I'm cooking. Don't get in my way. I'm going back and forth doing this and that. Don't interrupt. I'm focused.
Yeah, just leave me alone. Okay, so they tried this blind center in, where was it?
Massachusetts, the Carroll Center. Well, then a couple years later, I was sent down to what then was called Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind. Now, I think it's the Lions something down in Little Rock. And I did a training program down there. I originally went down for the IRS TSR training.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't want me, so I switched over to the sales program and did the sales program. And I went all the way through it and managed to get my license to sell insurance in Arkansas. But while I was there, I met and married my now ex-husband and got pregnant for my first child. Basically, I totally switched vocations. I wanted to be a mom. So
how was his sight? Could he see?
He was what they call a high partial. He had sight in one eye, and he had had a his mother had hemorrhaged during birth, so he lost blood to his optic nerve.
Yeah.
So his was not hereditary. We had no fears of that. But by the time I got my insurance license and everything, I was a month away from delivering my baby.
Oh.
So I never actually sold any insurance because I had the baby and became the mom. And my husband at that point finished his schooling and was hired by the IRS. He was in the computer program and was hired straight out of it by the IRS. We were moved to Washington, D.C. when the baby was 3 months old.
Uh-huh.
And basically just started our lives in D.C. with the new baby and the new job and everything.
Raising your children.
Yep, and I was blessed by the fact that he made enough money that I could stay home and raise kids. And it took 3 years before we had the second one. She's 3.5 years younger than the first one.
Uh-huh.
So my son is, he'll be 24 this year. My daughter just turned 20. So, and the marriage lasted 16 years. So it was not a bad marriage. I mean, it was we moved from D.C. to Springfield, Virginia, before the second baby was born. And when she was 3 months old, we moved up here to Cincinnati, Ohio, and been here ever since. So we just didn't want to raise our children in the D.C. area. There was just too much going on down there for kids.
I understand that. I didn't want to raise my kids in Houston, so I moved up here.
Yeah. The thing that finally did it for us was the Satan worshiping. The kids were disappearing off the street, and I felt like a target.
Yeah.
You know, you got a blind mother with an infant and a toddler. It would be such an easy grab. I mean, what could I say? I couldn't even say male, female.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know. So I got to the point where I didn't dare to go out alone with the kids, and that was when I said, we've got to move, because you can't live in fear like that.
And you ended up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we ended up here, and it was we've managed to get our first house, and I mean it was perfect. We had the house for the kids and nice neighborhood, and everything went along really well for quite a while.
Until
he decided that the grass was greener on the other side of the fence and turned us all invisible and left.
Actually, he married his secretary, right?
He married his mistress, actually.
Well, that's always nice.
Yeah, she apparently was involved with him for a year before he filed for divorce. But he did marry her, and they're still married, so who knows? You know, it may be.
And left his wife and kids and...
Yeah, basically he doesn't even talk about his children. Most people that associate with him now don't know he has two grown children.
Uh-huh.
Which is very sad. And my daughter has nothing to do with him. My son does communicate with him, but since he got his license and started driving, the only time he really hears from Dad is when Dad needs to go somewhere, which is very sad.
Now, does Dad still live there in Cincinnati?
He lives in part of Cincinnati, yeah.
And you live in Cincinnati. But your children were, the boy was 15.
15, and my daughter was 12. Awful hard.
Yeah.
And basically, one day Dad was there, and he was Dad, and the next day he was gone. And they did not exist. I did not exist. We were just no longer part of his life, and it was very hard for them.
Did you get to keep the house?
No, the courts ordered it sold, so.
Yeah.
That was the worst thing, was that I had to give up the house I'd raised the kids in. I couldn't keep it and let them stay in their house, in the home that they knew.
Okay, what did you do when all this happened? What did you do for work? What did you decide to do?
Well, actually, I was being trained to be a 411 operator when I had my initial heart failure during the divorce proceedings. And BSVI basically said I was too high risk with the heart condition. Until that was dealt with, they really could not train and put me in a job because I could have a heart attack. And it was a very, very bad heart condition. I was not expected to live for 6 months. So they were justified in discontinuing the training and everything.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I ended up having a defibrillator implant within 4 months. I had the heart attack in the end of October, and I had my defibrillator implant at the end of January. And it just totally turned my life back around. I was able to function again. I was not up to the normal standards that I was before the heart attack. But it made it so that I could claim my life back again and start dealing with stuff. And meanwhile, the divorce had been finalized. And so that was...
And Dad was gone, but the kids still needed Mama.
Yeah, basically my daughter, she was with me in the emergency room. And she leaned over and whispers in my ear, when, you know, the doctors are saying, well, this doesn't look good. They're not taking into consideration my 12-year-old child is there.
Yeah, really.
listening to them. And she leans over and says, if you die, we have to live with him. And it was like they said they didn't know what she said to me, but they said my heart rate changed. I started to fight.
Yeah.
I wasn't giving up anymore. But it took 4 days for me to come back to consciousness and to be where I could communicate and everything. And the first thing I told them was, don't talk about people because you think they can't hear you. I heard every word you said about me not making it through the night. And, you know, it was not very encouraging.
Really? But, you know, this was all caused really by stress.
Yes, it was brought on by stress. And I had a year before my heart failure, almost to the day, I had a perfectly normal, healthy echo EKG. Because one of my doctors, their EKG machine in the office was faulty, and they didn't realize this. They thought my EKG was off, so they sent me for an echo. And then later, after the echo was done, they found out that it was the actual machine, not me.
Really?
And so they had a perfectly healthy echo from a year before to compare to what basically was. My heart had expanded 3 times its size and was pumping blood into my lungs instead of into my veins. It was awful.
Yeah.
I was very, very sick. But because of the divorce and the stress and the single parenting and everything, I ignored the fact that I was so sick because there was nobody to help with the kids and nobody to do what Mom needed to do.
Until you could no longer ignore it.
Exactly. When I finally went to the doctors, and he says, you are to go straight to the hospital. You are right now having a heart attack. And I went, can I go home and see my kids first? He says, no.
And they put, let me guess, they put those little nitroglycerin pills under your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He said, just go. And
I did stop
and see my kids. I'm so bad. But and my daughter went with me. She wasn't about to let me leave without her. So, and one of my best friends was with us, and she took my daughter home. And they called my brother, who at that point lived in Virginia, about 8 hours away. He was to be guardian of my children if anything happened to me.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you better call him. Just let him know what's going on. Well, he managed to, between using his flashers and getting escorts, he got here in 6 hours.
Yeah.
From Virginia. So, and he brought his family with him. Basically, he threw everybody in the car and left. Called his neighbor and said, take care of the animals. I got to go.
Yeah.
And
but you got through that. That all came, as we always say, that all came to pass. And you got through it.
I got through that, and I managed to, get my life back under control. And I was able, luckily, with the spousal support and the child support, to continue not to work and to take care of the kids and be there. Because they, at that point, they were old enough not to need me. But emotionally, they were not ready to be to have their lives turned upside down. I mean, we'd had to move. They, at that point, she was going from junior high school to high school.
Oh man, bad time, bad time.
Yeah, well, and she had to go from private school to public school.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
made it a lot worse. And because there was just no way I could do private school
couldn't afford it. Yeah.
No, it was like almost $5,000 a year at that point, and that was. We won't even discuss what it probably is now. But it was a rough couple of years, and then I ended up, at the end of 2000, I was hit by a van walking on the sidewalk in what I thought was safe zone. I got my clot cleaned by a van and ended up in 2 years of physical therapy and casts and all that good stuff, learning to get my left leg working again.
Got hit by a van walking on the sidewalk.
Yep. I was on the sidewalk, And I was going sighted guide. I was not, thank God, using my dog because they took me from the left side, and it would have killed my dog. But my daughter and I, she had, because of the agreement with the courts and everything, she'd had to spend Christmas with her father.
Uh-huh.
Because she wasn't old enough to say no that year. She was only 13. They don't get to say no till they're 14. And so she was miserable by the time she got back to me. We went out to dinner to cheer her up, and we were walking to catch the bus, and we were on the sidewalk, grass on both sides, and a van turned into a driveway that they thought was there, and it was about 10 feet further up, and basically took me out.
Wow. And your daughter was with you?
Yeah, and they missed her totally. Totally missed her.
But
the thing is, the driver said, well, I saw her, I just didn't see you. It's like, hello, you know, I was going sighted guide. I was closer to the van. How could she have not seen me and seen my daughter?
Did he have insurance?
The driver did, yes, but it ended up in court. And the judge basically threw it out, settled it for medical and legal costs, said there was no reason for me to get anything else after 2 years of physical therapy and in and out of CAS and having to learn to walk on the sidewalk without being afraid of getting run over.
I don't understand that at all.
No, I didn't either. I did not either. And I just was so frustrated by the whole thing. It was just...
Did you have a lawyer?
Yes. Apparently he didn't do very good at his job.
You did. Is this the same lawyer that got your divorce?
No, I wouldn't associate with that man again. But, no, well, let's... I'm going to use a bad word. By the end of the divorce, he called me a vindictive bitch.
Yeah.
So this is my lawyer.
Really?
It's like...
Yeah, people tend to think of lawyers and doctors as really educated, bright people.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Absolutely.
Yep.
I know some lawyers that are dumb as a post. How they got through law school. My wife's an attorney, and I've met some who I don't understand how they made it through law school.
Well, I should have known that this guy was not trustworthy when he wanted to argue with me that my daughter was not old enough to guide me at 14 or at 13, that I should have been using my dog, and it was my fault I got hit. I was on the sidewalk, hello, you know.
My kids and I, when they were 8 and 9, 10 years old, we used to walk places all the time together.
They were born and raised with me. They know how to guide me.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, my daughter tried doing it when she was 4 and forgot I was a lot taller than she was. She went under a tree, and I ate the tree.
Yeah,
you know?
But my kids and I used to walk because we lived within about 2 miles of their grandparents, and the only way to get to their grandparents was walking. It was along a fairly busy street. So, you know, when my kids were 5 and 6 years old, in the afternoon, after lunch, we might walk to Pawpaw's.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean... Everybody that's totally blind, that has raised their kids, doesn't hesitate to go with their kids. I mean, it's just common. But, they wanted to argue the fact that she wasn't old enough to be responsible for both of us. And, I mean, it was like, excuse me, you know, this is not the point. The point is I was on a sidewalk, and the van wasn't supposed to be there.
I can hear Sheila saying right now, watch out, Dad. Look out!
Yeah.
I can just hear her saying that, little girl.
Mm-hmm.
She was sweet kid. How'd she grow up to be such a... Anyway.
Oh, I hear you. That's what I keep asking my kids. Could you revert back to childhood, please, at least with your mannerisms? Because you're really annoying as an adult.
Yeah, it's amazing how they do that. Sheila, I shouldn't fuss about Sheila. She just
kids, I am blessed with two very good children. My daughter is especially... We bought a house together in January.
Well, you're with her now, I was going to say.
We still live together. And she is the one that is taking time off work to drive me up to Columbus for the heart hospital every time they need me up there for tests or anything. Yeah. In fact, we go this afternoon. She has to take half a day off work, and she does not get paid.
Well, we're getting kind of close to the end. I want to discuss, because we talked about this last time, let's discuss this defibrillator. Defibrillator, is that right?
Yeah,
And what happens when it goes off?
When you see on TV where they go clear and they zap them, that basically is what this does internally. It is wired directly into my heart, and it delivers a shock directly to my heart, and it will knock me off my feet if I'm standing up. Been there, done that.
First time it happened, you were just getting out of the shower, I think you said.
I was getting out of the shower on Christmas morning, and bam, I was on my hands and knees going, what the heck happened? And then it fired again, and it fired again. It went off six times that morning. It was not a good day, but I was able to wake up my kids and get one of them on the phone to call 911, and I got on there with the 911 operator because they were arguing with the fact that I had a defibrillator. They said, well, if I have a defibrillator, why do I need an ambulance? And I went, because I'm having a heart attack, you moron.
Yeah, that's really ignorant. Why would the defibrillator be working if something wasn't wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And the rule is, if it fires twice, you're fine. If it fires a third time, call for help.
You need to get somebody.
Yep, and mine fired six times. That was a double dose. You know, you call for help, and you really do call for help. But she then called my neighbors and said, get over here, my mother's dying. You know, it was just, it was not pretty.
And so what did they do for this? They gave you, change your medicine, or did what?
Well, they did change my medications. It turned out part of the physical therapy that I was undergoing at that point, they had given me cortisone shots.
Yeah.
And the heart doctor had agreed to one cortisone shot, and they had delivered six. So they basically overdosed me with cortisone.
Yeah.
And it screwed up my entire system. It threw everything out of whack. I became diabetic. I had, over the next 3 months, my defibrillator actually fired 39 times before everything was regulated and under control again. It was a long 3 months. We spent three times I had to go down by ambulance, and it was not a good time in my life, but they did straighten it out. And in May of 2004, I got my second defibrillator, which is a slightly smaller, more personally programmed unit, because my battery was dying on my first one from all that action.
Wow.
So, and now, after my stay in the hospital this summer, there is a third defibrillator choice that has a third wire into the other side of my heart, which is one of the options I'm faced with. But they have actually put me in the heart transplant program because I am only 44 and basically healthy aside from the heart. And I had no health issues before the heart condition, so they've decided to try to get me through the transplant program.
All right, real quickly, let me ask you. I thought there was a rule that they could only give you so much cortisone within a certain period of time.
I think that there is, and I think they were right there at the max.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because it was, you know, I had injuries to shoulder, hip, ankle, and knee, all down the left side. And they shot shoulder, hip, ankle, and knee, basically. And the worst thing was that it worked for the pain, but I could never have another cortisone shot.
Yeah, it'll work for the pain, because I have a little gout and arthritis, and occasionally about every 6 months I go get a cortisone shot, and man, within two or three days I can walk. Everything is just fine. My ankles are fine. Everything's great. But then she's real careful about, now, the last time you had one, okay, well, you can have another one. So she's,
exactly.
My little doctor's very careful.
Well, and I think without the heart condition, I probably would have been fine. But with the heart condition and the meds I was on, it just
This is from the van injury.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wonderful fellow with a van that didn't want to pay.
Nope.
All right. Well, you know, I don't know what you missed last time, but we covered a lot of ground this time, and the interview was a lot. I know a lot about you that I didn't know. And it was a good interview. We've inspired somebody that's going through a divorce to keep fighting, and everything. You'll come out on the other side someday, even if you don't think you will.
Well, that's, you know, a lot of people say, how can I, after the past 7 years has not been easy for me, health and divorce and relocating and everything, and I, you know, I've had one thing after the other with the van, and they say, well, how can you keep going? It's like you make the choice. You either face life and deal with it, or you don't deal with it, and you become a miserable person.
If you lose your eyes when you're 14 years old, you can deal with anything.
Well, so that's what I told them. I said, this isn't the first thing I've had to deal with, and it won't be the last thing.
Yeah.
You know, but you have faith, and you know you can go on because you're not alone.
This ain't my first rodeo. as Ed Zone said.
Nope, and I can still bust them Broncos.
We're gonna run this. I swear, if I got it recorded, and I've got a tape and an Adderall both running, if I got it recorded, Joe, we're going to run it this weekend. You're a sweetheart, and someday I look forward to meeting you.
Okay, well, have Don send the clip out, the link out for me so that I can listen to it.
I'll sure do that.
I'll
talk to you in a day or two.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye. Another example of what we're trying to show here, and that is, well, blindness is not fun, and at times it is really frustrating. It can be dealt with, and you can deal with it if you're facing it as a newly blinded person. Don't give up hope. You can have a good, happy, fulfilled life as a blind person. I know many blind persons who have done that, and I have myself, so I know. From personal experience, if that lady, if anyone would have a reason or impetus for laying down and quitting and saying, no more, I've had enough, I would think she would. But then what would that gain her? How would she be better off by doing that? You keep on keeping on. And one of the things about being my age, and I know that all of you aren't, but someday you all will be, hopefully, is that life has thrown about everything it can at me. I know. There are very few surprises left, I'm thinking, you know. Anyway, enough of philosophizing. Philosophizing. I don't know which would be correct. Maybe neither one. Just run in your head. How about that? Probably work better. Anyway, we always need guests for the show, and you'd make a wonderful guest, whomever you are, wherever you are. We'd like to talk about your life and maybe inspire some blind folks and blind persons who have recently lost their eyesight or who have given up hope of ever being able to do anything fun or have a good, fulfilled life as a blind person. Maybe you would inspire somebody and you don't even know it. So let me know. Phil Parr, PHILPARR, at Consolidated, CONSOLIDATED, consolidated.net. Or phil@philparr.net will also work. My phone number, if you want to call. Of course, the best way is to email me, because then I've got your address, and I can get your phone number and put it in my Outlook Express, and everything will work out. Anyway, if you want to call, 936-634-9500 is my phone number, and I'm here most of the time. Can't always talk, because I do all kinds of things and get busy, but I'll talk if I can. If I can, I'll call you back. Phil Parr, PHILPARR, at consolidated.net. Write me and come be a guest on either show. We do The Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. Love to have you. Thanks much for listening. We'll see you next week. All right.